No, 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 yeah.
That's okay. Here we go. Action Bronson meets hot dogs. Gets hot dogs. No, meets Mike Ditka. Gets hot dogs with Riff Raff. No, I saw this. The Riff Raff part. This is at Doug's Hot Dogs in Chicago. Well, hello everybody out there, music video land, and welcome to another edition of This Week in Music Videos, a podcast that keeps you up to date on what's going on with music videos. We're talking about those music videos, aka filmed inserts. I'm trying to get that slang going. My name is Adam. This podcast is brought to you by IMVDB, the Internet Music Video Database at imvdb.com. With me as usual from Bushwick, New York, is Doug Klinger. How you, Doug?
I'm doing super good, Adam. I'm doing super good.
But you live in Bushwick, don't you?
I do. I'm still recovering from that you're trying to get the slang out there.
The filmed insert slang, yeah.
Yeah, that's
big
great.
Time. You know, we gotta have Urban Dictionary. I Google Urban Dictionary phrases a lot during the day. Mm-hmm. And then with us as usual is Mr. Adam Alexander, Fringe Music Fix. How you doing, Adam?
I'm doing pretty good. Ready to go once again.
Oh boy,
that never sounds genuine.
Yeah, it's FYI, very utilitarian.
Just so you know, we never believe you when you say that. So great.
And I had the idea to because people may listen to these in the past, and I kind of referenced what like. I think people like kind of know what's going on in the world based on like what songs are super popular. So if somebody's listening to this a decade in the future, they can kind of get an idea. And my favorite way to gauge that is a Billboard Hot 100. And the number one song this week is Uptown Funk by Mark Ronson featuring Bruno Mars, which I'm very glad has climbed to number one. Cause it's like,
the video is Vivo certified now.
It is Vivo Survive. That's a fantastic video as well, directed by Cameron Duddy, I believe.
Yes, who was on this podcast. And just FYI, if not FYI, but just listen up. If you're listening to this podcast in 10 years in the future, email us and tell us what pants are popular.
Right. And I think the way email works 10 years from now is that we'll get it now?
We're going to get it now. So we're going to find out the hot takes on pants, but early.
We're going to be way ahead of the curve where it counts.
Way ahead of the pants curve.
Because the pants fashion changes so
significantly.
So significantly. You look at like shows like Mad Men, and the pants are just...
Like, what are those? Like, sometimes I'm like, what are those? What has he got on? What are those? Oh, those are pants? Weird.
So we're talking about, as we always do... pants. The week in music videos. What's popular? What's been going on?
What do we think are neat?
What do we think are neat? And this week is kind of a, I don't want to say indie week, but it's one of those weeks where we don't have like a super very poppy song at the top of the music video charts. We've got artists like The Weeknd and Charlie XCX, a little bit of Imagine Dragons. But it's not like
those are big artists, but they're certainly not like they're not rocking multi-digit.
They don't have a spot on here.
Yeah,
they don't have double-digit million views in a single week.
Correct.
Like we had last week with
Sugar.
Yeah, Sugar, which like ended the week with, you know, like 35 million views.
So I was wondering if we could talk about this Charlie XCX video for Doing It.
Yeah, I think we should start doing it. It'll probably be the second most popular video of the week. And it's interesting. It's not like Charlie is incapable of like reaching high view count levels. Her Boom Clap video, directed by Sing J. Lee, who is going to be the first guest on our interview podcast, that's a promise. That video is over 129 or 130 million views. So she can get up into those numbers, but she hasn't kind of reached them since that video.
Well, I think Charlie XCX has a bit of an uphill battle because she's kind of, and I don't think through any like I think it's been a strategy for her. She's been like the chorus singer on some amazingly popular songs, most notably Fancy by Iggy Azalea, which was an unbelievably massive hit, as well as I Love It by Icona Pop from 2012. So she's one of those, she's, you know, she's kind of teetering on the edge of being like that girl, you know, the one people maybe don't know by name, but they have heard many songs that she's in, which I think is a way to make a career in film. I don't think that's where a lot of pop stars want to be for whatever reason or not, even though that I think it is like a viable career. But she's definitely trying very, very hard to break out of that mold, I think.
It's just weird, though, that like as I'm watching this video, I'm like, why am I watching both of these artists together right now? Like, I don't understand why, like, this remix of this song, which is a song that I really love, one of my favorite songs off the Charlie XCX album.
Doing It.
Yeah, Doing It. Like, why it now has Rita Ora. Essentially, just, like, as far as I could tell, I never put the lyrics side to side, but, like, just singing the second verse, like, same lyrics, just now Rita Ora's voice. And they're, like, together performing, like, I don't, like, I, you know, like, if Ariana Grande does a song with Nicki Minaj, like, you understand the purpose of pairing those two artists together for each of those artists. Like, what is having Rita Ora in this song or in video, like, helping or doing for Charlie XCX?
I mean, obviously, like, we're kind of used to seeing, like, an artist of a bigger caliber or more popular with one that's maybe less popular. But like you said...
Or just an artist that's, like, doing something different, right? Like, Nicki Minaj is, like, a rapper who's can be, like, explicit. And, like, pairing her with Ariana Grande, like, makes Ariana Grande then, like, have a song that can be explicit, you know, and, it kind of, like... adds maturity to Ariana Grande. So, and the same is like Fancy, you know, Iggy Azalea is a rapper and she doesn't sing, and you bring Charlie XCX onto the song, who can sing, like, a hook that people like to listen to, and it makes, like, a perfect pop song. Like, that it's serving a purpose. Like, what's Rita Ora doing here? Why is she around?
There's not a whole lot of contrast. They kind of do a very similar thing. And neither of them is really pushing the other forward in terms of popularity. They're pretty close, I think.
And in the video, they're doing the same thing. They're just like, when they're performing, they're just like swinging their hips around and looking fly, which, like, neat. But, like, why is it coming at me in this one video? You know, why?
So it's interesting it's kind of interesting factoid that both Charlie XCX and Rita Ora were featured on Iggy Azalea songs. And I love Charlie XCX and I love Rita Ora. I think it's going to be tough for either of them to kind of break into the Iggy Azalea level. Not from like a talent perspective, but I think from just you know, there's so many weirdly, you know, you look at some of the people who have made it really, really huge in the last few years, there's so many weirdly kind of compelling things about them, Iggy Azalea and like Nicki Minaj and Ariana Grande, are such like weird out there personalities, kind of larger than life personalities. And I think Rita Ora and Charlie XCX are not quite like out there as they are. And I think they come across in this video. We should describe a little bit about what this video is about. It's directed by Adam Powell. And it's very, I watched this video and I tried to pick up several threads that I kind of had to drop because I didn't know what was going on.
I don't think that this video has a narrative.
No, but it starts out kind of trying to convince you that it has a narrative. It's the opening shot is of like a man in a suit next to a telephone booth.
Yeah, right.
But like then looking then off camera, doing a commercial pitch.
That never like connects, and there's like there's like static in between. So like in my head that was just like, after watching it a second time, I'm like, this is just someone like flipping through the channels and then they just like landed on to whatever this Charlie XCX Rita Ora like like plotless movie.
Yeah, but then they're kind of like a Thelma and Louise type character. They have
maybe because they're driving, but there's no like.
Yeah, but they do kind of, I don't know, they kind of like half rob a convenience store. Or maybe they just buy things really quickly. I don't know.
No. They're definitely like robbing and there's a car, but there's no like, and they're two ladies. But that's essentially like I don't remember Thelma and Louise like having strippers or fat guys in bikinis or like, you know what I mean? Like all of that stuff. And all of that stuff is like, that's the stuff that frustrates me the most. About this video is it's not necessary to just throw music video tropes into a music video. Like this music video would have been fine without the fat guy in the Speedo or the or the male strippers, and it would have been the same video. It probably better because like that shit is dumb. Like those things are tired. Like those have been done 100 times.
But those are the things that BuzzFeed likes.
That's right. This premiered on BuzzFeed, we should mention.
And I would argue that some people, a lot of people, still like the fat, naked guy in a thong. Not me.
Yeah, but who? But anyone who Charlie XCX is like trying to appeal to?
I think that audience is changing.
Hmm.
Which is an interesting point.
What are Charlie XCX audience?
Yeah, because Adam mentioned that neither of them are very out there, but I think Charlie started being a little bit out there, and she's tamed it down quite a bit.
I don't. So, in terms of like Charlie, like she's made her last two albums are really great, and like as far as I'm concerned, like she could keep making really great albums, and that's a fine career. Like, what's wrong with that? Like, yeah, like she might not be Ariana Grande level, like, but you know, she keeps making like great albums. Like that's a different type of career, I think. But you know, I guess not the type of career you hope to gain by doing songs with Iggy Azalea.
So yeah. there's also just a few of the images in this video, because this is one of those videos that jumps from a lot, you know, image to image to image, kind of in a kind of a. Who's the director that did the Your Life is a Lie video? Tom Kuntz, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And it kind of has, you know, it also jumps from like medium to medium. So something will be really super saturated or dark, and something will be like very, very grainy, like a film. So one of the, I think, the most compelling images in here. First of all, I love Rita Ora, and I think she has like a very kind of effortless, you know, camera presence and presence in general. And it's kind of fun seeing her with Charlie XCX, especially in the more candid moments. There's a part where two like male strippers dressed as cops show up and they start stripping, and it's kind of fun to watch them in that moment. But there's also, like, she's also dressed up as, like, Charlie XCX is dressed up as, like, a cowboy? Some sort of, like, cowboy with all pink. Which is kind of seems like something that would be around a lot, but I haven't seen that much. And it kind of suits her. She even kind of leads a weird group dance at the end of all the characters in the video, where it's very clear that nobody has any idea what they're doing.
That's all the stuff that worked for me. Cowgirl and the line dance.
I liked that. Yeah, it was fun.
For me, what works is I'm into the stuff with Charlie by the pool, before the fat guy enters frame. So like I feel like that stuff is like it's like really good, like natural Charlie performance, like shot really strange through this like really familiar like
pool
like
gate.
Those like fences, yeah, those seem really familiar, but everything else about the scene seems like strange and out of place. And so it's like a really interesting juxtaposition, and her performance seems great and like really natural. And then, like, the fat guy walks into frame, and I'm like, fuck this shot. Like, I loved it, now I hate it.
This isn't the kind of video. I mean, the thing that I think Charlie XCX and Rita Ora as well lacks is, like, and I hate to say it because it sounds so, like, cliche or just, like, obvious, but, like, a brand in a way. And you don't build a brand. I mean, these are, I like this video a lot, but it's not like a brand building video. Even the Break the Rules video by Mark Klasfeld, who is, you know, a seasoned director, kind of legendary director. I don't think he knew what to do with her either. I don't know if anybody kind of knows what to do with her or what her brand is or what to, I mean, maybe a director will come along.
Well, so then I think it's different. But that's I think the scenario is different there. I feel like, all right, so I feel like if you like look at the Brother video first, because that's the one that was made first.
And for like, breaking look, up.
For breaking up. And like look at the style and like and references that are used in that video. You can pick up elements of that in every video she's done since. Like this very like cult film, like retro aesthetic. Like there are moments in these videos that like still feel like you can pull them like straight from a 90s video. Like the intentional like chroma driving with mm-hmm. the like fake background and stuff. Like I feel like you can see the threads if you're like starting from that Brother video, which doesn't make sense in reality, right? Because like that's not how
music videos work. But Doug, I think the Ryan Andrews ones had that 90s thread as well.
Well, the Ryan Andrews one continued with it. I think the Ryan Andrews videos are more. It's a different kind of. It's the Ryan the Ryan Andrews videos are like a copy of a copy, not in like a disrespectful way, but sure. like in the way that like Tumblr tries to be 90s. But it never like it's not, and then like then the Charlie video, the Ryan Andrews and Charlie videos are like Tumblr inspired, and sure. so they have those 90s threads, but they're like through a different internet yeah. vessel. I do feel like the Brother video is a lot more like directly sure. referencing the 80s and 90s stuff, whereas like the Ryan Andrews stuff is through like that internet prism. First.
But I would say that, I mean, in comparison to Rita Ora, the 90s stuff is Charlie's brand. I think she has kind of formulated a bit of a style, image, whatnot.
But I just don't think it's a very singular
enough.
Vision, you know?
No, it yeah, may yeah, not be enough.
It's just one thing. It's like, all right, not like that's cool. Like, that's a place to start. And, like, who knows, like, why we haven't been able to pick up on that, because like I don't think personally that it's like a thing where Charlie is like doesn't have a personal direction that she wants to go that's deeper than
90s
like the 90s
sure
but like whether or not like we can get like whether or not like that's able to flourish or if she wants it to flourish or what, like there's a reason why we're not able to find it. And so,
but I think it's really kind of, I don't know how, in what way it's instructive, but for me, the best that both Charlie XCX and Rita Ora have looked from like a styling perspective and from like a, something that sticks to you, with you perspective is their Director X directed videos for Fancy and, what's the other one? Black Widow.
Yeah,
I mean, Rita Ora looks fantastic in Black Widow, and Charlie XCX looks amazing and Fancy, and not just in a way that where they look, you know, pretty or whatever, but Charlie XCX looks like Charlie XCX. You know, she's kind of unencumbered by all these other pieces, which is not to say she shouldn't make videos like that, and not to say her image shouldn't be like that, but I think that it's important to look to those kind of things because those are branding moments for her. Even yeah. the Break the Rules video. I mean, I keep going back to that because that's the closest she's gotten to kind of bringing on like a super mainstream director to be, you know, to bolster her image. And instead of focusing on, you know, Charlie XCX as the main, you know, focal point of the video, Mark Klasfeld kind of, other images like school buses and like
definitely. Well, but I don't look at the Break the Rules video having Mark Klasfeld as like a move that an artist does to bolster their image. I feel like Hiring a director, like Mark Classfield is what you do when you want like the safest possible bet. Like you just
Yeah,
know
but
you're
I
gonna
mean,
get your,
Doug,
you just know you're gonna get
but
your
that's the
bread and butter. Like
direction.
that's it. Like
Yeah,
Mark
but I mean,
Classfield
that's the
is a
direction
bread
that
and is a.
she's teasing now. That's what she's been pushing lately, whether it's the label or whatnot. I actually think at
Either
this point
way,
I'd be
though.
happy if she went full high production pop, like a clean high gl like a fancy with a Charlie Solo song. That I feel is what needs to happen now, because that's what's been teased for three videos now,
But I'm
minus
not
the
just
brother.
talking about Charlie at this point. Like, I'm talking about
Right.
what an artist is doing by hiring Mark Classfield or a director like Mark Classfield. I
And I
think
think she wants to
what that
go.
artist is doing, whether whatever they want, what they're doing is they just want like the most safe, bland like music video you can do. Like, you're not trying to make any risk as an artist by hiring Mark Classfield.
But there's that's
Director X, you are taking like Director X
yeah.
will make you a safe video 9 out of 10 times, but I still feel like Director X is a more rigid director and will take a risk if he wants to. And I feel like Director X, like, although it might not be our favorite types of videos, is like making the videos he wants to make. And Mark Classfield feels like a guy who's like making the videos that he thinks the labels want.
I mean, I realize, I do agree that Mark Klasfeld is more of a safer bet, but I feel like the idea that his videos are still really good, I think. And I think they're really enjoyable. I mean, if you look on his page, the number one video is, Last Friday Night by Katy Perry, which is co-directed by Mark Klasfeld and Danny Lockwood, which in its way is kind of a risk-taking music video. I mean, this music video is what, like a 9 minute, like eight minute and 10, 11 second video that plays like a little movie that has Kenny G, that has all these like different elements in it, which is, on the safe side in terms of image, but is like fun all the same. And I think that's what he did for like Florida Georgia Line, and who was the other, and like even Britney Spears for that like dumb Ooh La La video. It's like it's still kind of a fun video. And I think he got to Charli XCX, and Break the Rules has 18 million views, but it's not like a fun video. I still think somebody
Break the
has to
Rules
make it
is a
fun.
terrible video.
I know it's just,
Yes.
somebody needs to make a fun, and I'm not saying that any like Adam Powell is an amazing director. He's made some of my favorite videos of all time. His video for Girls by the 1975
Yeah, it's awesome.
is a
Adam Powell
fantastic
is a
video.
great director. He's a great director. And Charlie's
But
worked with great directors.
somebody needs to make her fun.
It seems like, I don't know, like you guys mentioned, I think everyone's a little bit confused about what to do with her, 'cause she still wants to be like the indie pop. They want to convey that, but they also want her to be bigger pop, and none of these directors are quite sure how far to go in what direction.
I just don't know if I'm ready to if I'm ready to say anybody is confused. Like what we're getting could be what they want to, what everyone wants to give us. Charlie, the label, Mark Classfield, everybody. These are the videos that everybody wanted to make, and these are like the artistic moves that everybody wanted to make. Like this could not be confusion. Like we could be reading it as confusion, but like I just can't. I'm just like not ready to place that over it.
But we agree that they're missing the mark, though. Like, nobody's loving these videos.
I don't think breaking up misses the mark.
No, it doesn't. I'm not. We always have to exclude the brother one. I'm speaking to
Well, I'm not
the
just saying that for
Classfield
like a reason.
in
Like
this one.
the brother video isn't necessarily super fun, but it's also a song about breaking up, and it's like, I don't know. I think that's a good video. And the
Yeah.
Like the boom clap is also like the Sing J Lee video, I think, exists as an outlier because
Sure.
of how tightly it was tied into the release
And
of the
that's
film.
her most popular solo video. I mean, I think it says a ton about that video and Sing J Lee that it's in front of the Mark Classfield video, in terms of popularity.
It's by a mile.
Yeah. But in terms of like this specific video of doing it, you know, I agree, Doug, that I think that one of the challenges that Adam Powell faced was that you have two artists that are not really like, not, I wouldn't say complement each other, but they're not really differentiated enough to be, for Rita Ora to like feature on a Charlie XCX record. So he had a massive challenge in sort of bringing them together. I do think he did a really good job of, instead of like putting them in different worlds, just bringing them together in the same world, because they're going to be there anyway. You know, and I think that's, their chemistry is really apparent in this video. That's one of the things I really liked it.
Yeah, and they seem like they were genuinely having fun with each other. None of that stuff seems forced. It's not like the situation. It's not like Iggy Azalea and J-Lo.
And can we mention that? I think this is the first time I've seen somebody wearing like bell bottoms and platform shoes in a video in a while, and they obviously look amazing on Charlie XCX.
Yeah, I did like some of the outfits a lot. It had some cool stuff.
Yeah, especially the I'm looking at the behind the scenes pictures. They've got a great picture of Charlie XCX and Rita Ora hitchhiking, and Charlie XCX is wearing those bell bottom jeans. Or no, not jeans, but like some sort of striped pants. And I could definitely, I'd be okay if those came denim. Back.
Who knows if they're denim?
I don't think anything like I think the 70s are an outlier in terms of fashion. I don't know if a lot of things from that era are coming back, but it's kind of fun to see it in a video.
This is definitely the pants episode.
Oh, yeah.
We're back to the pants. It's good, though.
It's cool. So should we talk about another video about with pants?
What video?
Or one with no
about?
Pants?
Every video has pants. I'm thinking every video has pants.
We're gonna spend a little bit of time in this baby love video. So why don't we get into it?
Why don't we do one that we like? That we all. All right, fine. Let's talk about baby love.
I like this video. This is.
Oh, awesome. I love this video too. This is just gonna be another like. It could get. Anyway, let's talk about baby love because I do like this video too.
We won't let it get.
Yeah, we won't let it get to us. I agree with Adam. Stuff. So
dig into the good stuff.
Let's talk a little bit about this video. I'll kind of just describe it first. This the artist is, and I had not heard of her. I know Adam and probably Doug have heard of her, but I was unfamiliar with her before I watched this video. I'm admitting, and that is, her name is Petite Melier. Is that how you'd say it, Adam?
Yep, you got her.
And she is a French singer / songwriter. And she's been around for a few years, and as the name would indicate, she is very tiny white woman. And she has a few videos. I think the first like kind of breakthrough video for her was a video called NYC Time from last year, from July of last year. And this video that came out this week is called Baby Love, and she's one of those artists that it's all in the styling. She has way too much cheek rouge on, I guess, a cheek blush, whatever you call it. And she kind of dresses in these like very either. I don't even know how to describe it.
I was ready to see how you were going to just like be able to bottle her fashion into a sentence.
The one outfit very much looks like something that maybe a baby would wear.
Well, somebody in an article that I read like definitely struck a chord with me and mentioned that she's very much like a young Mia Farrow. Like, you remember like Mia Farrow and like the Rosemary's Baby era, where you know, Mia Farrow was, you know, in the age that Petite Melier is in the 60s, where she was wearing all these like kind of like modern dresses.
Her outfits are extravagant. That's how I would
extravagant. Yeah, like in like the yellow dress that she wears in a lot of this video has kind of like weird modern 60s elements to it. But she's also dressed like basically in like Adam said, like something that a baby would wear, basically underwear for a lot of the video.
And almost a baby bonnet at one point.
Yeah,
she's got all sorts of crazy hats. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just like flowers on the top of her head. It's a lot of dancing, right?
But we should mention, so the kind of central element of her videos, at least in the NYC, NYC Time video and Baby Love, is a really kind of tough to describe and tough to start a conversation about.
Well, who knows? Does anyone know where this Baby Love video was shot?
I do not know.
Adam?
I don't know, and I'm terrible at guessing based on what I see. Looks like Africa.
It looks like Africa. Yeah, that's the important part.
Yeah, that's the idea, I guess, that they're trying to get across.
Because she's basically this like white woman who looks like she's 12, wearing like pigtails and too much, you know, blush on, dancing.
She's like very white. She's paler than me.
Right.
Yeah, and she's dancing in like basically like villages in Africa, but not villages where people are. These are colonized villages where people are in like, you know, the kids are in school uniforms, but they still have, you know, grass huts basically, right. And that's kind of like the central concept of this video.
Some of the houses seem a little fancier that she's in, and there's it's just dancing, right? Her dancing sometimes with them, and then a lot of like have like really composed shots, right? There's like a lot of like obviously like none of the shots were like handheld, run and gun. Like there's a lot of like natural energy in the video, but like everything seems really composed. Like the framing seems really like calculated.
Yeah, actually, I think that probably has something to do with the directors A.T. Mann and Napoleon Habeka, I'm not sure how to say the last name, but that the Napoleon guy was an American Apparel photographer. Huh. So I think we get a lot of that style of composition.
Yeah,
in his videos that just makes things a lot more sense now.
Seriously, so much more sense. So here's the thing, I think it's important to bring up. I was surprised when Googling this video that there weren't like more, you know, think pieces about cultural appropriation. Have either of you guys come across anybody like talking about that?
No, but I wonder, has the video really reached an audience to merit those, or merit is probably not the word, but maybe it doesn't have the audience yet. I think it would. If it was a Katy Perry video, we'd see some think pieces.
I mean, 70,000 views in a couple of days is pretty significant, isn't it? We talk about Katy Perry videos and stuff on this podcast a lot, but like 70,000 views in a couple of days is not nothing.
But I think that the key element is, I think it's a little too smart for that like basic cultural appropriation label. Like if Taylor Swift is going to go, you know, on her hands and knees underneath a bunch of twerking black ladies, you know, of course, you know, every blogger opens up a new post.
I can guarantee you if Taylor Swift made this same video, the internet would explode.
Yeah, but she couldn't have made this video for a number of reasons. No. And number one is that the thread that is like kind of through this video specifically, it is like, you know, cultural colonialism, French colonialism of, you know, Africa basically. But that is kind of the thing. She is like the one white woman in these African, you know, environments, and not just any African environment. These are all children, and these are all children in school clothes. And even one of the environments she's in is this sort of ramshackle schoolhouse. This is very much, if you know about these images and kind of like have experienced these images, you know exactly what she's referencing here.
And so do you think that it's because of that you think it works in its favor of why it hasn't been talked about in terms of cultural appropriation?
Yeah, I just think it's playing with it in too smart a way. Like I said, you know, if you're Lily Allen and you've got twerking ladies in the background and they happen to all be black, that's a very easy thing for a blogger to pick out and be like, well, you know, she's using, you know, black people as an ornament to kind of bolster her image. This is much more complicated, especially because of the fact that she's not just sort of appearing as any normal person. She's appearing as sort of like an infantilized, I think, version of herself in her styling and even in the way she sings and the way she acts. There's a very weirdly, very, very weird scene in this video where she wears, I think, the skimpiest version of anything she's worn. And she's walking into basically a room filled with a bunch of dudes who are all playing instruments and staring at her. And it's at that point you realize like how intentional all this is and how there's so many more factors at play here than just like, oh, she's appropriating something.
Well, and obviously like there is like the way that it's shot also like with it, the way that it's composed also mirrors that feeling of it all being intentional. And I don't disagree with that. I just still like there's still like moments that feel like there is a separation, and there are moments in particularly the NYC Time video where the other people in the video feel ornamental.
I think that's much more of a clear cut case. So walk through the NYC Time video a little bit.
Well, in the NYC Time video, which is also directed by the same two guys, is her being like carried by this like big dude, and then there are times where she's like kind of performing in front of like these four black dudes who like seem like just like they're maybe from New York or something like that. The song's kind of about New York, and it definitely like end up in New York City. There are definitely times where they don't appear to be in New York City.
They start in like a country road, basically.
Yeah, right. And he's like carrying her there. It's kind of carrying her to New York City. And then like once she gets there, there are these guys and she's kind of like performing in front of them as they kind of just like kind of stand in a b-boy stance or something. They kind of just lean up.
I think one has an Adidas, an entire Adidas.
Yeah, like they kind of have like that kind of outfit on, right? Like they seem like they're like plucked from an 80s rap video, and they're just like standing there kind of leaned up, like stand, like with their arms crossed, as she's kind of like dancing in front of them. And like those are moments to me that like feel like are that like the people that aren't her in that video feel like props.
Mm-hmm. So, well, the guy who's carrying her there is a big black guy, and he's very literally a prop, kind of. I mean, he's just, you don't even see his face ever.
Yeah, so how do you know, because he's completely covered in, like, sweats and stuff. How did you know he was a black guy?
Yeah, you can see it a little. Right around his neck, if you wanted to look for that.
Well, I guess I was assuming that maybe that was, like, a scarf or something. I guess
you can see his ears. You can see part of his face, too. And there's a part, Adam, you know, like, you remember when he, like, turns around? And he's got, like, they cover his face in, like, green screen paint, kind of, or whatever they did.
Yeah,
and
then right.
You can see the city through his face.
Well, or they just paint it out. Hmm. So I don't really know what it all means. Like,
I think though, like if we wanted to look hard enough, and I'm not gonna do this because I don't want to, but I bet you there's a think piece for this video out there.
I'm just surprised that there haven't been. Is my main point. And these are like the reasons why. Like these are things where, if it wasn't Petite Mueller and it was Taylor Swift, which like at the size of our thumbnails on our site. Like easily could be, like you can't really tell the difference. Like it's
that's
just
true.
So like yeah, like yes, like she's French, and there are different perspectives. But like, you know, it didn't like it didn't save Lorde from like getting people like talking smack because she like said gold chains are lame. Like that's even further. Like Lorde never danced in front of four black guys. So
or was it sole, you know, white person in, you know, basically posing in front of African villages. I just think it goes, I think in the US we have a very, and especially on the internet, we tend to have this very like binary view of either something is existing on its own or either something's being lifted up by denigrating something else or appropriating something else. I think somebody looks at this and it's too complicated to fit into that like binary model.
Well, and that's also another piece of it. She's not an American artist. These exactly, aren't American yeah. filmmakers. For whatever reason, they don't seem to be as targeted with these think pieces and commentaries as the American artists do.
Well, I think they just have like an additional layer of like defense against it necessarily. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, the most recent example I think of is Lorde. So, right. And
that's true.
And what's the She's and what's the American. Other one? Hard Out Here for a Bitch.
Oh, Lily Allen. Yeah,
Lily Allen yeah. too. She okay. got it too.
There's so, a couple that got it.
So fuck your point, Adam. No, I'm kidding. But it's just
I'm gonna write a think piece about you.
Well, I just like though I don't have the think like I certainly am not the person who would write a think piece because I don't know what the I don't know what it all means. It just feels like the type of thing where like if because I feel like the people who write think pieces as much as like we joke about them oftentimes have legitimate points, and these are the types of images that I usually see associated with think pieces about this. And so there's no way that it was done without like knowledge of that, especially if these guys are like American Apparel photographers. But it's just an interesting thing. I feel like it's something that they it's a thing that they want to a conversation they are like hoping is associated with this. I guess I don't want to get into that type of speculation.
But the thing is that I think the French especially and other European countries have a longer history of sort of dealing with colonialism in art. I mean, I remember in film school watching, several, feature films, independent feature films that dealt with, the colonization of French Algeria, which is the country that I failed to recall when talking about the Charlie Hebdo attacks.
Oh, you got there.
Yeah, I got there. I got the Wikipedia page open. But it's, the United States doesn't have that to deal with. They don't have such a complicated history in that way. And there's many complicated things about the history of the United States, and I think we deal with it without even really knowing that we're talking about it and dealing with it. In the same way we look at something like this sort of in video that's very kind of referencing and I think bringing in many, many references that us as American viewers don't really understand. I think somebody who's French watching this video, steeped in French culture would bring something away from this very, very different. And I think it would still be provocative, but it would still be different. But I think...
I also think that just in general, North America is much more sensitive to appropriation than countries outside of the United States and Canada. That like we're the ones writing the think pieces. Interestingly enough,
mm-hmm. I think conscious would be a more appropriate word, but it's
sure it still depends how you view it.
It still gets the same point. Yeah. Anyway,
but did you guys like this video? As the
well, yes, I love this video.
This is a great video.
I love this fucking video. I love this fucking song. I love Petit Mueller. Everything is fucking fantastic. But we kind of trudged in a whole bunch of other territory for a while instead.
We tried not to, but we.
And so, because it's unfortunate though, like, just to go real quick, like. That that the music is so approachable for not French people. Is the song so great that like I watch it and I'm like, who's mad about this? Who's mad? Who's
mad? You're looking for people to be mad, and I think that when you're like practicing that, or when you're looking for that, it's not there. I don't think it's going to be there for this video, and I don't think it's going to be there because it has less than 100,000 views. I think it's not going to be there because. The point isn't there because it's done in a really artful way.
I mean, if you take images out of it and put them in a vacuum,
yeah.
there could be a conversation.
She's meant to be a provocative artist, but I think that, a provocative... I think the thing that Americans freak out about is when a non-provocative artist stumbles into something where everybody can be like, we got you about this. Like, you fucked up here. Like with the Taylor Swift thing, say what we will about Taylor Swift, but I don't think she ever been like a provocateur in any real sense. But when that, when that, when the Shake It Off video came out, everybody was like, "Ah, oh, shit!" You know, like we got like you know, we got a week's worth of blog content right here,
right?
That we can stoke. And but the thing is that Taylor Swift wasn't trying to say anything or like reference anything besides.
Besides dancing,
yeah. She wasn't really... I don't think she was trying to say anything about the relationship of, like, you know, white people versus people who, you know, black women who twerk.
She was making no cultural statement at all. She was just... They just picked out 10 different dance types.
GIFs. They took 10 GIFs.
And recreated them with Taylor Swift. And so... And, like, you know, and try... yeah, whatever. But those think pieces came fast.
They came hard and fast. But so let me just say the theme of the week. I think this is a pretty sexy week. We talked about Charlie XCX in her bell bottoms. I mean, I'm gonna go. There are parts of the Baby Love video that are sexy, I guess, if you're into that shit. And then we should talk.
Yeah. It's Adam, super sexy.
Don't even start to tell us about what you like.
Sorry.
About this video. Keep away. Though. Stay back, man.
But there's another video that I think kind of took it to another level.
Oh, wow.
What's that?
Oh, yeah. Go.
By this artist that I haven't heard of before called The Weeknd, but the last E is gone. The E and end is gone.
That's weird. Yeah, I've never heard of this band either.
I think they're a Swedish rock group.
So
Swedish hardcore band, yeah.
Adam Fairholm, if it wasn't clear who The Weeknd was, there's like 5 seconds at the beginning of this video, maybe longer, that it's just like of his face.
Mm-hmm. So I figured, because he's the only one that doesn't have like X's on their ass cheeks in this video.
Right.
Well, Dakota Johnson doesn't have X's on her ass cheeks either. She, who's the star of the movie that this is promoting, which is 50 Shades of Grey.
Right.
Wait, really? This is promoting 50 Shades of Grey?
Well, it's from the soundtrack. I don't know if the... someone needs to convince me how this video promotes the movie.
Well, I mean, the main actress is in the video. And I would say that's
a pretty
big promotion.
I get that.
Wow, okay. We have a thing on the site for anybody who's familiar that kind of goes through Amazon automatically and picks out the best match it can find. To do the album thing, and I just saw the 50 Shades of Grey album over on the side, and I was like, well, shit, I gotta fix that, because that's obviously not correct. and even as I was watching this swinging bondage thing, I was like, fuck, why did it grab the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack? This is obviously not from the 50 Shades of Grey soundtrack, so now I feel like an idiot.
Well, even with Dakota Johnson being in this video, the tone and like the sexiness of this video, as far as I know, is not like the same tone and sexiness that they strike in 50 Shades of Grey.
Really?
Is 50 Shades of Grey like a bunch of women with ass cheek check marks?
No, but this is totally like bondage and black leather and like sexy stuff. This is,
I guess,
exactly.
I don't know anything.
50 Shades
I don't know
of
anything
is.
About 50 Shades of Grey. But I felt like 50 Shades of Grey was just like a more like modern like romance novel.
No, with it's
like Fabio shit.
No, it's
what
like
are you
some dark
about?
Stuff. It's some
you
dark
know, you
stuff.
You remember those like romance novels that would have Fabio on the cover of them?
I don't think 50 Shades of Grey is anywhere near that.
Oh, no. I guess I all right, that's what I thought it was.
Pretty edgy. It's some edgy stuff.
That shit is edgy too. Have you ever read one of those romance novels?
Yeah, they are. That's true. I haven't read one.
They sell them at like CES.
You read one? How many? Like lots? That's different.
So let's talk about this video a little bit, because it stars The Weeknd, and it's kind of this video is kind of going normcore a little bit. It's basically The Weeknd in the theater. He's the only one in the theater, but on the stage are these women who are kind of they're doing a dance, but they're all dressed up in this weird semi-bondage thing where they've got corsets on, but they've also got thongs and tape over their ass cheeks that look like X's.
Mm-hmm. Do they have X's on their boobs too? I think they do. Maybe. Do they? Yeah, they do. Totally. They do, yeah.
So they're doing
maybe not. Just pasties.
They're just pasties. So they're doing a little dance, and there's a little bit of humor in here because there's a little, like, breakdown. And if you want to be entertained by this, go to 1:43 in the video. There's a little, like, kind of like beat breakdown, very, very quick, like 3 seconds long. And it's of this girl doing the splits, the one with the X's on her ass cheeks, and she's, like, flexing her ass cheeks to the rhythm of this little breakdown.
That's a variation of twerking, I would say.
I think that's I would argue that that takes more physical prowess than twerking.
Oh, it does, but I feel like it's still kind of like can be lumped into that conversation.
Definitely,
it's twerky.
It's a derivative.
And by the end, Dakota Johnson is hanging in the theater, pink style, in these bondage ropes, kind of swinging around. If anybody's not familiar with 50 Shades of Grey, it is kind of a romance novel that stars Fabio, but it's famous for having bondage elements, which I would just like to preface that people from the actual bondage community are against 50 Shades of Grey because of the relationship that it portrays between the protagonist. It's literally the antithesis of like a healthy dom sub relationship. But anyway, mm-hmm. we'll get past that. So I don't know. I thought this video was fun. I thought it had a little bit of a humor to it, which may be kind of like a hint of what the movie will be like. But it was fun.
50 Shades of Grey funny?
No, it's not. Adam, have you read 50 Shades of Grey?
I have. I know all the women that I know have read it, and and I'm not. I almost read it, but I didn't. I know a lot about it, though.
All the women that you know.
Yep, they all read it.
Huh.
And if anyone doesn't know, Dakota Johnson, who is the female lead in 50 Shades of Grey, who hangs at the end of this video from some bondage stuff, is Don Johnson's daughter.
Hmm.
So there's a little fact for you.
Sam Taylor Johnson, the director of this video, no relation.
Wait, well, she's not just the daughter of Don Johnson. She's the daughter of Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith.
Right.
Which is... which is kind of a rarity, a super famous mom and a super famous dad.
I don't know. Those types shack up.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Those types shack up.
But they don't all star in 50 Shades of Grey.
No, they don't. I can't believe we talked about this video for so long. I threw it on the list because it was the most popular of the week.
Well, it's got butts in it, but I think it's kind of funny because The Weeknd is kind of such a... He's a young guy. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's read 50 Shades of Grey. I don't think he really gives a shit. He seems more like an artist type to me. But he just... this video doesn't... So this is directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. This video kind of doesn't know what to focus on. Like, what people want to see. Do they want to see The Weeknd? Do they want to see these ladies? And it kind of hedges its bet.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think that The Weeknd's music and all that stuff has always exuded lots of sexiness. So I think he's a natural fit for this soundtrack. But people that are going to see this movie are probably female for the most part. So yeah, the butts, I don't know. It kind of may be counterproductive.
I don't understand I really don't understand the purpose of random woman butts in any video. I don't get what it does.
Why?
I just don't see it. Like, I don't know what purpose it serves. Like, I know what the purpose of putting Nicki Minaj's butt in a music video does. And I think largely, like, the people who went and watched Anaconda, who were watching it for butts, were watching it for hers. Not for, like, the other strange girls that are in there. Like, a very small number of people were looking for those other girls, I think, compared to the number of people who were watching for Nicki Minaj.
So you want, like, you need those butts to be like very well justified. These ones are not.
I just don't get it. I just don't get it. Well, like, you're on the internet. You're on the internet. If you want to watch a butt, why are you going to watch a weekend video?
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. His videos have always had a lot of butts. But I don't know that this one should maybe have. I'm not saying that's what I want, but guy butts would make more sense.
That's what I want in this video too.
Would this make more sense? Because I thought the anyway. So
I don't know what makes
both, maybe this both video. Butts. Just like a lot of, just mix it up.
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't like. I'm not like super excited to see Nicki Minaj's butts. Like, it's like a. Some secret thing or whatever. I mean, it's not that everybody's got a butt. It's many people have nicer butts than Nicki Minaj. It doesn't matter if it's hers or not.
It takes all kinds of butts.
I understand that that's how you feel about it. Mm-hmm. But the reason it got all of the views was not like people who were like, I want to see. Like, if anyone was watching that music video for the purpose of watching it for butts, mm-hmm. it was for the famous butt. And not for the random peoples.
Can we get a count on how many times we just said butts?
Well, whatever. It's better than if we were like some kind of like New England Patriots interview and all we were talking about was balls. Can we talk about like a video that's like super good?
Yeah. What is your favorite video of the week, Doug, that we should
Let's talk here? About my... Okay. My favorite video of the week is Can't Control My Love by Total Giovanni. What'd you guys think of this video?
Totes Giovanni.
That's what I call them. Totes Giovanni too. Yeah, this was my favorite video of the week. I feel like this video is nothing like the three videos we just talked about.
Well, walk us through this video a little bit.
Okay, so this video centers around like what kind of feels like a small town, and there's like these older kind of bully kids and these younger bullied kids. In the video, and one of the bullied kind of through a video game that features Totes Giovanni in it kind of gets the gall to stand up to these bullies, and as the bullies are picking on a girl, he first kind of like rushes them and knocks the dude down, and when you think it's going to be a fight, the kid just starts like dancing, like breaking it down, and the other like older, bigger kid like can't do anything to him. Like he just like decides to not fight him, like because the kid is just dancing so awesome, and like that's essentially what happens. And like in the distance, like the kid like looks over before he goes and does it, and like the band is there like encouraging him, and. What's really interesting to me about this video is like the narrative elements of this video like are very real feeling, and then all of the stuff with the band is absurd. Like them performing in the video game, they're like singing into hair dryers and in like
the instruments are epic
space uniforms, but it for some reason, because of how grounded the narrative elements are, like it's you're all right with it. It doesn't like you don't like lose it. It doesn't take you out of the story, and it like just makes so much sense. And the kids are really good. Like the young kid dancing, he just like he makes all these like smirks and faces that are really like charming and endearing. And yeah, I just like love this video.
I'm not sure if you mentioned, but it's definitely set in the 80s. He's playing Metroid on his Nintendo console. And
no, he's not.
Absolutely.
He's not playing. I thought he was playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
No, he's playing Metroid. Sorry.
Oh man, that just ruined a lot of things for me. Sorry.
You hate this video now.
Yeah, this video is the worst. Okay, yeah. Now that you say that, I saw that immediately and was like, oh, that's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But that, yeah, you're right. It is Metroid. Damn it.
And and I forgot to mention that, like, the girl head. That he envisions on the Metroid body. Mm-hmm. It's like the girl who he saves.
Mm-hmm.
It's cute. It's cute.
He's got a thing for that girl, like right from the beginning.
Yeah, it's his crush.
Yeah. And I thought both musically and the video very much reminded me of something that maybe a Chromeo fan would be into.
Hmm.
There's some similarities.
How
Maybe
so?
Just the song, but I could see this video being... I mean, the stock is a lot different than what we see with the Chromeo video, but they would wear funny things, and they sound kind of like this.
I think that this video kind of taps into an interesting, like, emotional vein for some music. And I think that, you know, there's the element of music that you like the music or the style or whatever, but then there's also this element of, like, you like the people that are making it, and you kind of imagine they're on your side a little bit. I think especially I did this when I was younger a little bit more than I do now, but I think that plays into rap music as well. Like, a lot of rap music, you know, people will listen to rap music who are not familiar with it and hear, like, like, what's a good rap lyric that talks about, like, basically, I'm going to steal your girl and have sex with her, and she likes me better.
Like a specific lyric?
Or just, like, you know, you know what I'm talking about in general, basically.
Yeah, there's, like that. There's a song called Mr. Steal Your Girl.
Exactly, yeah, stuff like that where it's, like, very first, like, everything in rap is first person, like, I am cooler than you, I'm going to make more money than you, you know, I'm going to steal your girl because you suck. You know, these kind of things, and you were listening to it, you don't think, like, oh, shit, like, I'm an idiot. You know, it's not something you listen to, like, feel like crap and put yourself in the place of the person that, you know, Drake or Lil Wayne or any of these other rappers are talking to. Exactly, yeah. You're thinking...
Drake in the situation.
Yeah, you're thinking of, like, you're on the side of Drake, basically. You're on that level. Like, he's on your side, basically.
Yeah, see, I take it a step further. When I listen to Drake, I am Drake. I am Drake. Like, everything he's saying is me.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, that happened. Oh, my God.
And you
put
yourself...
Drake on.
You put yourself in the place of that, and I think, like, you know, especially maybe when I was younger or whatever, I kind of took that a step farther. I could see myself putting myself in the place of this where you're kind of, like, faced by these bullies. And, you know, if you're, like, really affected by music, then you might think, like, oh, well, I've, like, subconsciously, like, you've got, you know, these people that you listen to on your side. This kind of, like, part of who you are in a way.
Wow, that's fucking that was so well put, dude. That's awesome. Yeah,
was that? Oh, wow. I thought I was super losing steam.
No,
but there we
man,
go.
No, so much, man. Like, I just now, like, thought back in my head and like definitely as a kid did that shit. Like,
mm-hmm.
Like if I was like I, you know, kids listen to music and like use it to like get through shit and like empathy. Like, that's why I'm Drake. Like, I listen to Drake and it's like, fuck yeah, like I got the confidence of Drake. Like, I could steal people's girls. Like, that's terrible that I can do that, but I possess the ability. Like, I never would. Like, girls aren't property of which to be stolen, but like the fact that I have the power is empowering. And so and then I channel that into, like, my math homework or spelling test. So, yeah, totally, dude. Like, what? Like, that's such an interesting layer that you found in this video that, like, yeah, I definitely didn't pick up on. But it's there, man. I dig it.
And even on, you know, like, a surface level of just, like, a narrative and being a really interesting video, I think this video just, like, this is definitely my favorite of the week, kind of, like, pulled in all of those elements. And even the casting for this is really, really good. It could be, yeah, especially because they're all wearing flannel for some reason.
Yeah, it's a very interesting video. Like, the way it's kind of presented is interesting too, like how it opens up with just like this shot of like a television being smashed without like much context.
Mm.
And everything kind of builds out. Yeah, I really like this video.
Hey, Adam, do you have a favorite of this week?
Well, I do, but I think I want to talk about another one on the list real quick because I think it's worth mentioning. The Staves video for Black and White.
Yeah.
It's a narrative video and has really great performances from both of the news anchor personas. It's a male and a female. And kind of what they've done in the video is they kind of give you the in-between when the broadcast has gone live. The one female who's apparently romantically involved with the male,
they're married.
She finds out that he's been cheating on her. And then we kind of get her reactions while they're live, and it's very suspenseful. And then they fight in between shots. And yeah, super cool. Like, did you guys have anything to add on this video?
It all kind of like plays out. Like, the very beginning of the video is the makeup girl whispering into the female anchor's ear that her husband, who is her co-anchor, has been cheating on her with the weather lady. And then it just like go, like right after she finds that information, it's like a cut to the director, who is like, you're on in five, and then he like counts it down. So like the whole video has this like tense kind of like knowledge of them being like on live TV as this is playing out. And it like, it plays out in a really like kind of interesting way, where like it cuts to the like what you're seeing on the broadcast, and then what's like actually happening. And like on the broadcast, like only half of what is like actually happening is shown on television. So you're like getting both perspectives, and it's like a really just like interesting view of this like narrative playing out. And I think the acting is actually really great, kind of across the board. All these like little strange characters who like you can, who are doing like what they'd normally be doing on a news set, but also like you can tell they're interacting like with their eyes and like reacting to what's going on with these anchors as well. It's like a very interesting thing that falls apart.
The members of the Staves portray the supporting role. So the makeup girl and the weather girl are the members of the group, which is also a cool little thing.
Well, there's three. So the Staves are kind of like the English Haim, right? They're all three sisters. There's
Emily's, oh yeah, there they are.
There's Emily Stave. I think it's Stavely. Stavely Taylor, Jessica Stavely Taylor, and Camilla Stavely Taylor. And I believe Jessica is the weather girl, Camilla is the director's assistant, and then Emily Stavely Taylor is the makeup girl who initially starts this whole thing. And I think it's interesting, you know, we come across videos that have like a narrative kind of speaking element to them a lot. But it's kind of funny that in this entire video, nobody like says any dialogue at all,
except for the very beginning.
The very beginning. Yeah, we hear that, because I don't think it's like reasonable to assume people would be able to lip read that. But after that, it's basically like an entire narrative that plays out, and we see narratives play out without dialogue a lot. But it's interesting that this narrative plays out with a ton of dialogue, but we never hear any of the dialogue.
No, none of it's much very important, except you do, I could make out that she goes and whispers to the male anchor immediately after telling the female anchor. She goes and whispers to the male anchor, she knows.
Yeah.
So she
trying to figure out what she was saying. Yeah.
Yeah, she drops the bomb on both of them. Like, what a crazy character that is. Who like just sets these dominoes to crash? Like, she intentionally just like let on live TV this shit. Like, she wanted all of this to happen, essentially.
And
I was just gonna mention that it's also kind of cool that like the dialogue that we see, the lip reading part of it. I think a lip reader could probably tell what they're saying. All the shots are very clear of what's being said. So when they're arguing, I think someone could probably tell us exactly what they're saying.
Yeah, I wonder if they even like had a specific stuff there, if it was all just like emotions and they could say whatever they wanted. But like, I still feel like it's interesting that there's like a lot of talking. There's like a lot of mouth moving in this video, but like none of it really like does much to carry the story along. It's all in like just like kind of the the reactions and like people's physical behavior and not about what they're saying.
It's kind of funny that they chose Australia in the 90s as the kind of like place and time that they would show this, because it's obvious that the entire art department went to great pains to make this in the 90s, early 90s at that. And in Australia, obviously, anybody who has a speaking role has like a heavy Australian accent. And even though the map the weather girl, you know, is using is obviously, you know, Australia. But it's an interesting like artistic choice.
Yeah, well, partially I think that it helps sell like the cut between the narrative elements and like the news bits. by having it, because like the news bits look like a 90s show, whereas like the narrative elements are shot like on something that was made today. And so I think it helps like make that balance. But it is funny because like they really do sell it across the board as like being 90s. Like it is very, like they did painstakingly made everyone look like they were from that era.
Mm-hmm. And I think that if there's an article that we'll link to, interview with 1.4 about the video, and the director mentions that there's this YouTube clip about a news reporter insulting their female colleague on air. And it is an Australian news reporting organization. So I think that's...
I thought I saw the other way. I saw one that was Australian... And I like the lady gets the guy. He like says something like, you know, it's like, oh, it's so surprising that something so small can have such a big impact. And she's like, well, you'd know something about that. And like then hits her news thing, you know, turns on a dime with a dick joke. So probably something different.
You know what? That is exactly the clip. It is the woman insulting him. So there we go.
That's it. Now everyone knows it.
This is 80s Australia, by the way, as well. That I think we're just misplacing the time.
Yeah, I actually thought that it felt more 80s too. Do you have a favorite video of the week, Adam Fairholm?
Adam Fairholm, do I have a favorite video of the week? I wouldn't call it my favorite video of the week, but it's one, Doug, that you picked that I kind of wanted to bring up because I found it really oddly compelling, and that is for Tobias Gesso Jr., and the song is "How Could You, Babe."
Cool.
I
also found this oddly compelling.
Yeah, this is a video, you know, in 2014, now 15, I think we're very used to music being either like electronic in some way, or kind of produced in some way, and this video is by a guy named Tobias Gesso Jr., which I had not encountered before. I don't know if you had, Doug.
I think he's a new boy.
He's a super young guy. Obviously plays the piano, but reminded me of, you know, kind of younger artists in their like really early stages, like Dylan or the Beatles or whatever, where they would write these really kind of like simple emotional songs. And I've always wondered what those artists would do music video wise. Like, would it be something really large and conceptual? Would it be something stripped down? And this video is kind of somewhere in between. It's called "How Could You, Babe?" And a lot of it is this guy, Tobias Gesso Jr., in and around L.A. playing this little piano in different places. He's like,
playing... it's not that little. I mean, it's a full size. It's not like a keyboard that you can put under your arm.
Yeah, yeah, it's a stand. I mean, it's a upright piano.
Right. It's not a baby grand, but it's, you know, two people have to carry it.
Right. He's like at a beach. He's at like a skate park. But it's shot. It's by Grant Singer. And I watched this without knowing that it was directed by Grant Singer. Grant Singer has directed, videos for Sky Ferreira, probably most famously, as well as Sleigh Bells and Little Dragon.
Ariel Pink.
And Ariel Pink, yeah. Some fantastic videos for Ariel Pink. But he brings, like, this, like, there's no real, like, effects in this video. There's no real artifice in this video. It's a really, like, kind of refreshingly honest video. And, like, there's nothing really, you know, there's nothing really to like hang on to as a hook, but I was like glued for the whole 4 minutes. I loved this video.
Grant Singer does this style of video like as good as anybody. One of my favorite Sky Ferreira videos is the "Everything Is Embarrassing" video.
That's and, a like, great video, yeah.
And we talked to Grant about that video a little bit on the podcast, but we also did like an interview where we a blog interview where we talked just about this video. And the way he talks about it was that like it was like not much like they just like went out and made it, you know, like there wasn't too much artifice that you like you talk about, like too wasn't too much like, and I think that he just like naturally knows how to like take the artist and like let them be themselves on screen, and like knows how to capture it in a way that like that helps elevate that. And you know, I think that Everything Is Embarrassing like feels a lot like How Could You Babe in that way.
Yeah, and the song is very, very honest. The video, in turn, is very, very honest. And you kind of, like, you know, you get the sense that you're watching the beginning of someone's career, kind of, in a way. Or someone's...
Yeah, like, I feel like this is... this guy's pretty buzzy. Alexander, is that so?
Yeah, he's definitely, like, an up-and-comer for this year. Lots of blog buzz.
Yeah, and it's just to reiterate, Grant Singer can do other types of videos really well too. I just feel like he's like really kind of mastered this kind. You know, he can definitely do something larger and more, you know, complex. But you know, these stripped down videos are really working for me.
And even in the larger, more complex videos he does, I mean, the focus is always on the people. And not even the relationships, which is really interesting. He tends to focus on them as like singular people, like in the "Put Your Number in My Phone" video by Ariel Pink. he just manages to take videos that have like very interesting concepts and make them about people. If you ask the average person off the street who had seen this video, that video for the, you know, the Ariel Pink video, or like the "I Blame Myself" video, or any number of videos, they wouldn't describe it that way. But what they're really describing is how, you know, interesting and how like magnetic the person was, which is a really kind of like a rare quality in a director, to be able to let that person shine without building like a huge structure around them, you know.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
But anyway, yeah.
I think that's good. I think we could stop there. It was a long list. We talked a long time about Charlie XCX, and hopefully she's listening and took all our career notes, because we got this thing licked, and we're the guys to go to.
We solved this for her.
We solved the riddle. The riddle of fame.
And if you want to see any of the videos we've talked about or any of the links we've talked about, go to imvdb.com/podcast. They will all be there. This is episode 140, I believe.
141, maybe?
Either 140 or 141.
140.
And if you heard us mention Sing J. Lee, Doug and Adam's new podcast series of interviews with people, that will be the first interview, and that'll be coming out either this week or the next.
Yeah, probably, hopefully next, because that would be fun for everybody, for all of us.
It would be fun for everybody, most of all me, because I'm not on it.
And so you get to listen.
You guys, Adam and I don't know if you know this, but Doug specifically kicked me off of that podcast.
Yeah, I was like, Adam, you don't have time to do more than one podcast. So
no, hey. It wasn't even that. Adam said that. Doug said, you're going to embarrass us.
Yeah, you always ask the shit questions.
This goes back to 2012 when I asked Prince EA what the scene was
Prince
like.
When you asked Prince E what the scene was like in St. Louis. Like, so what's the scene out there? What's the scene in St. Louis? That was your lead question. on a music video. I have it
written down, yeah.
That was on a music video podcast. He rose up back up again in you know, like internet people paid attention to him for a while.
But not as a make learning cool rapper.
No, it was a completely different thing. He was on Glenn Beck. I swear to God, there's an interview of like Glenn Beck in like dad jeans interviewing and like loafers interviewing Prince E on like a couch in a studio and like in a TV studio, not in a rap studio, and it's terrible. It's terrible. Not like, oh, it's bad, but it's great. It's also great.